Hello, and welcome to a podcast on why we can't ever intellectually understand God. And this podcast will have two sections. The first one will be, what kind of thing is God compared to, for example, a chair? So if I had to really quickly and simply summarize why the chair that I'm sitting on is different to God, what would be the what would I basically use to sum that up really quickly? And secondly, you know, how they different in their nature, the chair and God. And secondly, in the second section, I'll talk about why what I say in that area means that we can't ever intellectually understand God. We can't ever intellectually understand our Creator, although we can understand God on an emotional level and act on truths about God through some kind of faith. And we have some things in common with God in our soul, but intellectually, why what I'm going to say in this podcast means we can't ever intellectually understand God. So what kind of thing is God compared to, for example, a chair? What kind of thing is God compared to a desk? This may seem like a kind of silly question, but it's actually a really, really important aspect of understanding why we can't ever understand God in a really full technical sense. And so to answer that, we should perhaps look at some of the attributes that people often say that God has. So people say that God is loving, that God is powerful, that God is all-knowing, and so on. God is a mind. A desk isn't, for example, isn't conscious, for example. So right away we can think of a lot of differences between God and an inanimate object. But I want to concentrate here, and those are all good points, but I want to concentrate here on one really major difference, I think, between God and something in our world that I think can provide a really great way of answering the original question that I posed, which is, what is God like compared to, for example, an inanimate object? So the attribute I want to focus on is the idea that God is infinite. Because I think this, contained in the idea that God is infinite, is basically a really great understanding and definition of what God really is. So, let's say that I say that God is infinite. Well, one may ask, well, what does that even mean? What does it even mean to say God is infinite? I mean, we understand what an infinitely long line would be like. It would be a line going, for example, infinitely far off and to the left, and infinitely far off to my right, and if I tried to walk across the line, I would never reach the end. That would perhaps be an easy to grasp view of what an infinitely long line would be like. We have some sense of what infinity is like because it would be numbers that keep going up. So it would be numbers that ascend forever and ever. Although they wouldn't actually reach infinity if they went up forever and ever. If you counted upwards forever and ever, then you would be in an infinite operation. So that kind of gives a bit of information about what infinity to do with numbers is like. That's all well and good, but what is an infinite object like? Because I'm not just saying that God is an infinitely long line. I'm not saying that God is infinity in a mathematical sense. I'm saying, and I would interpret other people to be saying when they say that God is infinite, I should be interpreted perhaps as saying that God is some kind of infinite object. And so that's kind of a nice idea. It sounds interesting, but what does that mean? I think that the answer as to what an infinite object is like and what life is like, you could say, in the infinite world compared to the finite world, which is an interesting way of putting it, but is probably a valid way of viewing it as two kinds of kinds of existence, as an infinite existence and a finite existence. The core difference is that in the infinite existence, the infinite world doesn't really allow for a concept of distinctions. That seems to be the core difference between an infinite object like God and a finite object like a chair or a desk. Basically, the infinite object of God exists in a world that doesn't allow for a concept of distinctions and difference, like between red and yellow, one and two, various sizes and dimensions and so on, doesn't allow for any of those distinctions or differences. Whereas a chair lives in some, it lives in a world that basically allows for difference. So the chair has various heights. A chair has various heights in various aspects of it. It's constructed in a certain way. There are a lot of differences between bits of the chair and other bits of the chair. So that really, I think, is the core difference between infinite existence and finite existence, is a world with or without distinctions in terms of finite existence having distinctions. Interesting idea, but what is the evidence for that? And I'll later on go into what this actually means for everything else that I said I was going to talk about. So how can I evidence that? Well, for example, if you had an infinitely long and infinitely wide plane of grass, then it's interesting that you couldn't actually find your location on it compared to anywhere else on the plane of grass. Because if the plane of grass stretches out for eternity in every direction, pretty much there's really no significance to any specific part of it. Every place is really the same in any possible way that you could identify to any other place. That, you know, it's infinite in every direction. How can you locate yourself? Where are the differences between this place and this other place? There aren't any. So infinity tends to take away distinctions, and we can see the same thing with an infinitely high, infinitely long, infinitely wide cube that we could be in. We can't find our location anywhere in that cube. We can't find our position anywhere in that cube, that infinite cube, because every place is the same as every other place. So infinity is an idea that I think takes away distinctions. And I think that's also evidenced by the interesting way that we don't think that we can add or subtract to infinity. In fact, we don't really think that we can play around much mathematically with infinity at all. And what I mean by this is, let's say I have an orange and I get another orange, well then I have two oranges. 1 + 1 = 2. But let's say I have an infinity and I get another infinity, then how many infinities are there? Well, the whole kind of situation, that whole example is absurd because you can't change the value of infinity, but that's really what it's kind of illustrating, is that if I had another infinity and another infinity, then I would really, at the end of the day, only have one infinity. So infinity plus infinity equals infinity. Infinity times infinity equals infinity. You can't change the concept of infinity because it's, I think, distinctionless. Infinity doesn't allow for the concept of distinction, so you can't add to it. To have a 1 + 1 = 2 requires distinctions. So because infinity, basically, what I'm trying to say, doesn't have live in a world of distinctions, you can't have, like the oranges, you can't have infinity plus infinity making two infinities. You actually just have infinity, and there's no more, no less. It's infinity, that's it. Although I should note on a technical level that you can have different hierarchies of potential infinities, but I'm talking about absolute actual infinity, which is different. So that was in reference to some of Cantor's work. So you could make a case that we subconsciously pick up that infinity lives in a kind of existence or world, you could say, where there are no distinctions. We kind of pick this up, and that's because that's why we say that infinity plus infinity equals infinity, because we are picking up that there are no distinctions in that world. It is meaningless, literally, to say that there are two absolute actual infinities. And that's how I think actual infinity reaches infinity, as another interesting aspect of this, because you can often ask, well, let's say I keep counting up from zero forever and ever. Will I ever count to infinity? And the answer is, you will be in an infinite operation, but you'll never actually reach infinity. So how can you make the leap from counting upwards and knowing more and more and actually knowing everything and being all-knowing? And the answer, I think, is that the leap from a really high number to infinity, that kind of bridge, is crossed by infinity being in a distinctionless existence, basically. So in the infinite world, there aren't any distinctions at all between anything, which is absolutely impossible to get one's head around, but is pretty much, I think, the idea here. And I think that within this distinctionless existence of not even sort of bland grayness. That's how I sometimes visualize it. It's just there's not even colors there because colors involve a distinction. It's completely distinctionless. Within this really fascinating and difficult to visualize distinctionless existence that I say that God lives in, somehow every possible distinction exists distinctionlessly. So somehow contained within distinctionless existence and in a sense coming up out of it in our world is automatically every possible distinction that could ever exist. So it's kind of contained within distinctionless, so distinctionless existence. So distinctions, every possible distinction is contained, like I could visualize it as being sort of tightly packed into a really small box. Every possible distinction or difference between anything, any things, is basically packed into distinctionless existence. And so that's how God can know everything, because within his distinctionless existence, every possible distinction that could ever be between anything is contained in a way that allows him to look at it all at once. So whereas we would have to count up forever to look at every number, God contains every number as every possible distinction in this kind of distinctionless kind of existence. And so he can look at every number at once without having to actually count up to them, because they're all kind of packed in to distinctionless existence, existence without distinctions. So it's, I guess that's an interesting view and of what distinctionless existence is kind of like. And so it's kind of an actual eternity. And that's basically what kind of object God is. God is a distinctionless object. So to get back to the original question, there are lots and lots of possible things that you could think of to differentiate in one's mind why God is different to the chair one is sitting on, if you're sitting on a chair. There are lots of, you know, reasons, like God is a mind, the chair is inanimate. But what I think, and what I've been trying to argue, is a really core distinction, the really big difference between God and the chair I'm sitting on. What the big difference is that the chair I'm sitting on is in an existence with distinctions, which is why it's a chair and has various sizes and lengths and exists in three dimensions. So that's basically the core difference, whereas God is of course distinctionless. That's really, if you had to sum up God really quickly, that would be a way of summing him up. It would be that he is a distinctionless object, whereas a chair and a desk or anything else in our world is a distinction-full object, you could say. And that also explains why finite reasoning, the reasoning that we have, is actually very limited compared to God's reasoning, because there are an infinite number of possible distinctions between things. For example, between various numbers you could think of, between various sizes, dimensions, there are, for instance, an infinity of possible dimensions. And so how could you look at all of that at once? Well, you need the vantage point of a distinctionless world to know everything. You need a higher vantage point than our world. In fact, you'd need the vantage point, the all-encompassing vantage point, to look at all of that at once. You'd need the all-encompassing vantage point of a distinctionless world. Otherwise, you'll always have more possible distinctions to think about. Your processing power in a computer chip or in a brain is always going to have to go through one more distinction to know the answer to something in an infinite way. So you need a higher vantage point to know everything. That's why God knows everything, is because his vantage point is in the very heights. It's in the distinctionless world. So you can look at everything at once. Whereas if it's not that, if we don't have that, and we certainly don't, then we can be very, very smart. We can have an IQ of a billion to the power of a billion and work out the theory of relativity from almost no information over a cup of coffee. We can be that smart, but we're ultimately on a lower level compared to what you could know in the distinctionless world, because living as your reason does in a world of distinctions, you'll always have more possible distinctions to factor into your equations, into your thinking, whereas God, from that vantage point, does not have to factor anything more in. Everything is contained distinctionlessly in the distinctionless world. So, getting on to section 2 of this podcast, I'll talk about why this means we can't ever intellectually understand God, which is kind of a sad thing to think about, because we can never really understand our Creator intellectually, but which I think is also very much implied by God being infinite, and also by a lot of the writings in the Bible. It says that, I think somewhere in Romans, that how unsearchable are God's judgments and his ways past finding out. So I think the Bible also says, I mean, the Bible also says that that we can't ever intellectually understand God fully, except maybe through faith. So why is that? Okay, so all that I've said so far in this podcast can explain why our intellectual understanding of God is always going to be messed up, in a sense. It's always going to be faulty, because our reason always tries to introduce distinctions everywhere it goes. I mean, I can't literally think of anything without having some kind of, unless I'm kind of being a Buddhist, a Zen Buddhist in some sense, and kind of living in the, you know, distinctionless moment, I can't really think of anything without factoring in some kind of concept of distinction somewhere. You can't think of anything without, at some point, including a comparison between X and Y, without involving distinctionful reasoning. Unless you just kind of are trying to meditate, I guess. I mean, distinctions are always going to be in our reasoning. Our reasoning, because it is in a distinctionful world, is always going to try and introduce and make distinctions everywhere it goes. So why is that such a huge issue? Well, when it comes to God, and I would say the soul, which I'll talk about in a little while, this distinction-creating reason simply isn't reflective of reality. It's just not the way it is. God is a distinctionless object. If the only way we think of God is going to be involving distinctions of some kind, even between one and two, even between such basic concepts as 1 + 1 = 2, even in any way we have distinctions, I mean, if there's any distinction at all in our understanding of God, then that's just not the way it is. So our reason is always going to mess up our understanding of God, and I would say the soul. Problem is, there's just no alternative way of looking at our Creator without tying our reasoning in knots. We can't think in any other way. We can't think in the distinctionless way that God is. So we can't understand distinctionless existence, and yet we must understand our Creator in a really good, proper, technical sense. And so our intellectual understanding of God is always going to be faulty and messed up and fall short and introduce problems. It's going to be wrong to some degree. It may not be hugely wrong, but it's going to be wrong if we try and explain everything. But this doesn't mean that our emotional understanding of God is going to be messed up as well. We know that from the distinctionless world, that this distinctionless object is loving. And I think that the kind of law of non-contradiction of the distinctionless world that God comes from is actually love. So for us, in the world of chairs and tables, a chair equals a chair. A chair is a chair. A equals A. That's the case for our world. But in the world that's distinctionless, A doesn't just equal A. It's a different kind of identity. The identity is transformed somehow into love, to somehow identifying with what exists and loving what exists. So distinctionless existence loves itself. It loves what exists. It loves everything that comes up out of it. Just as it's kind of A equals A, that's its law of non-contradiction, is love. It's just different. And it's, for some reason, a mind from being distinctionless. I don't know how distinctionless existence becomes a mind and conscious, but it somehow does, or is, I should say. It's eternal, and it's a person. And it's pretty hard to figure out how that could come about, but I'm guessing that if we could figure out how that is in distinctionless existence, then we wouldn't be here listening to this podcast. We'd be pretty much God, because our reasoning would have to be able to understand the distinctionless, which it isn't, because it always introduces distinctions everywhere. So I guess to sum up that area, I think that we're left with a flawed intellectual understanding of God, or we're left with mystery. But we can still know God on the level that we and God share, because we have in common with God emotions, a spiritual kind of element, and a soul, which we and God have in common. So our soul is actually like God. Our soul comes from the distinctionless world, but we can't be completely distinctionless, because then we would be God. Our soul gets to be completely distinctionless, but our body and our reasoning and our knowledge can't be distinctionless, because then we'd be God. So basically, we're half gods. We're half. We've got one foot in the distinctionless world, and we've got one foot in the world of distinctions. And so basically, when it comes to love and the soul, we have exactly what God has. But when it comes to our reasoning, it's in the world of distinctions, and it can't understand not only God but also our soul, which we can't understand even ourselves and other people fully using some kind of reason. So that's basically why this means, this whole thing about distinctionless existence means we can't ever intellectually understand God. Thank you for listening.